It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Christine Kennedy.
And I'm Megan Todd.
Now, that was a little different, wasn't it? Everybody needs a change up once in a while.
Can I be a Van Wee today? Can I be Christine Van Wee?
Hey,
that'd be
why
fun.
Not?
I think I should. Okay.
Wait, we have a couple other girls' names covered, but we don't have a Christine.
Yeah.
So that works.
I take it.
Most of you know Christine from the real estate show, and she's been on our show before. And a lot of you know Megan, because when you call our office, guess who usually picks up the phone?
That would be me.
That would be. So we'll get into the personalities and so on after the market wrap. But meanwhile, a couple things going on. First, I want to welcome everybody. For all the regulars, thanks for always being there. You keep us going week after week. And if you're new to the show, either on purpose or just by accident because you're driving along with the radio on, leave it that way. Try to stick around the whole hour. We always promise that you'll get something out of it. Can't promise it'll make you money, but a lot of it actually does because, after all, that's what we talk about around here, money. And it affects everyone, as you know. But America's prodigal son and soccer dad has spent a week now turning into surfer dad and is on his way changing locations back to reality here and will be back with us next week, but he'll be in the office starting Monday again. And I've seen very few communications and a few pictures, and you can't feel sorry for him. That's all I can say.
Good for him.
Yeah. I was about to say, no, you can't, because we had that cold front the early this week, so well, he had to skip out on that.
Yeah, he kind of hit the best of everything based on what I saw from Costa Rica. Yeah, anyway, it's like I said, it's going to be a little different format today, but the one thing that's always up front is the market wrap. But first, we have 21 years of experience doing financial planning, about 20 years on radio. And the thing that I always tell people is you meet the nicest people in this business. You really do. First off, you know one thing when somebody comes to your office. They have an interest in their own money and an interest in learning. And that's a good start. So you're all on the same page. About 18 maybe years ago, a fellow named Captain Dave walked in. He got the title Captain Dave because he was captain of ships for hire. He took a lot of ships through the Panama Canal, which means you go somewhere and you bring the ship back and it goes through and then it goes somewhere else. So you get two destinations that aren't your home every time you do that. So to say the least, you've been well-traveled. And we've remained friends. It was one of those things that you just hit it off. And he and I apparently grew up somewhat similarly in time and whatever. And he has a remarkable memory for some things. I remember it first here because the world was in one of those messy points like it is today, which is one of the reasons I brought this up. And there's an old song from the Kingston Trio, and I couldn't think of the name of the thing, but the lines in it are things like, and I don't like anybody very much, and it's all about who's fighting who and who's hating who. So it wasn't seconds. A message comes through from Captain Dave. It's called Merry Minuet. And he's been a frequent caller. I'm sure most of you will remember hearing us talk about and to Captain Dave. Well, he's very ill, and I'm very sorry. But I'm going to stay positive. But thanks. We're going to miss the phone calls, that's for sure. All right, this week in the market, you heard Howard say that up, up, up. Not even sure that describes it. After a very lackluster Monday in which everything was down, 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 right at the end, this happened every day this week. This is so cool. You know we love last hour up trading. But at the very last minute, the Dow turned positive by a whopping 1 point.
Woohoo!
But it was green instead of red. We've been staring at red all day long. But Tuesday started out looking a little better, and then Wednesday better, and then Thursday was good. Friday looked like it was going to get off to a slow start and maybe take some of it back. It did not. It went up. So what we wound up with in this week's market was the Dow up 5.5%, the NASDAQ 8.2%, and the S&P 6.2% on the upside. We needed it. For the quarter, we're still down 4 and 11 and 6 on the indices, but I'm not going to dwell on that today either, because I'm looking at what we said a week ago today, and I brought this up as a something to think about. We had, not in this past week, but the week before that, we had March 9th. And for those of you who have been around this business a long time and pay attention to those things, March 9th of 2009 was the day following the worst 18 months of carnage that I had ever witnessed. March 9th woke up, market dropped sharply right at the opening, as it had every day for basically 18 months. But then, pause, and it started kind of just feeling its way up, 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 and it actually wound up to be a pretty good day. Well, that started happening with a great frequency, but we were so shell-shocked after 18 months of carnage that none of us would admit to each other or ourselves that it was actually over until about the 4th of July. It was that bad out there. And that has been with me, and I'm for the week, and I'm not going to sit here and tell anybody that March 9th was the start of the recovery from this crap we've been through this year, but I want you to think about it just in case, because if it turns out that way, and I'll let you know in 2-3 months if it did.
Then you are 100% right.
And I'm not.
And you never even said it.
That's right, but I'm never hesitant to say I told you so if it's been long enough that they don't remember that I told them so.
I got you. I remember. We got it. Megan, I got you.
Yeah, a little double talk there. But anyway, I don't know if it's over, but the news on the international front certainly did not improve in my mind what's happening in Ukraine and so on. And yet the market shrugged it off. And the only excuse I found in any of my morning sources was that traders were tired of going down. Now, if that's a good enough reason, I'll take it. Thanks, guys, for spending your money, because it sure looks better now. But it does create a really, really good lesson in trying to time the market. I would not believe any of you who last week at this time would have said, we're going to have a great week in the market. The only way I would have said it is if the settlement had happened in Ukraine, and then I would say, last week I would have said, if they settle this week, it'll be good. Otherwise, it won't be good. So what happened was simplicity itself, I guess. People started buying again. Everything was on sale. Market was not oversold anymore. And I see no reason why this can't keep going for a while. So put away your gloom and doom for now. Maybe we'll be wrong. Maybe it'll crash next week. I don't know. It's all dependent on this idiot, Dr. Strangelove over there, who has the bomb in his arsenal. But he's sure not looking good over there, and I don't know what'll come of it. For now, I'm just staying put. I think you ought to, too. And we'll go on to more fun things. We are represented here today with a great deal of age diversity. And there's things going on in the market and in the housing market that I want to talk about and get their view. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Christine Kennedy.
And I'm Megan Todd.
And if you missed the opening, Adam is away this week, and I invited a couple of my friends in because there's so much going on, and all of a sudden real estate is front and center in financial planning. So Christine Kennedy, for those of you who know her, knows that she has been in the mortgage brokerage business for
25 years.
You don't even look that old.
Thank you.
No problem.
It's just the only thing I know how to do. It's the only thing I've ever done. But
I'm going to ask both of you how you wound up where you are when we get into this a little bit. But Megan, for those of you who call our office, Megan's been an intern with us for 2 summers and then came to work
2020 June.
Okay, so yeah. Just about 2 more years. And last week, Friday, She took her CFP exam after working hard and taking all the courses.
Woo, 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 woo.
And unfortunately for her, this is one of the couple of times or one time every couple of years when instead of getting an answer whether or not you passed, you get 6 weeks of the most miserable waiting ever. It was, now if it makes you feel better, and it won't. When I took my test, they sent it by mail, and it arrived the day that 6 weeks was up in the mail.
At least mine will be electronic.
Yeah, at least you won't have to wait for the mailman. I checked the mailbox that day about five times because I knew it was the end of the 6 weeks. Finally it came, and here
good,
I am.
Good for
so
you
obviously
for
passed.
Taking all the time and energy and effort. Good for you. It's a big, hard, really hard test, so good for you.
Yeah, and I don't like standardized testing at all. And I knew going into it, I was with college, and I have my master's degree in business. I was like, I have to do it back-to-back, or else if I go to work, I'm not going back to school, because it's a completely different mindset. And these guys made me go back to school anyways.
We didn't make you, but we told
highly
you.
Highly suggested. Highly.
If you ever want to make any money, go back to school.
Exactly.
Highly
exactly.
suggest.
Megan was a very
not really a no
college student who probably set some kind of a land speed record for getting an undergrad business degree and an MBA.
5 years.
And it was kind of a, I don't know, lucky accident or something. We had lost our employee at the front desk to personal circumstances, and Adam knew that Megan had just been in school and all that, and he called her to ask if she could recommend anybody that we might interview. And before we got to call anybody else, she called back and said, how about I do it? And Adam called me, and it delighted, by the way, because you know, some people, you can explain it three times, but they need five. Some people, you can explain it five times, and they need eight. Some people, you can explain it 10 times, and they'll never get it.
I'm going to say never.
And then there's Megan. You tell her once, and maybe if a long time goes by, she'll need a reminder, but not really. So we were, of course, thrilled because it frees up our time to have someone who's competent up front. And now, assuming all goes well, and first she's got to pass. That's,
you know, and she will. Positive thoughts.
Oh, I'm,
of course
that.
She's got
I told her that from before the day. But she's got to do that, and then it's another year of experience, right?
Yeah, I think it's about January 23 that if I pass, that the my license would be activated, because I need 6,000 hours, and I'm at like 4,000 and change.
Mm-hmm. And once that happens, then her first job will probably be something like replace yourself.
Oh. I hadn't thought that far yet.
you have to have my kind of optimism to do that. But anyway, we're delighted. She has been on the show before, and I want to get her perspective on an article that I read this week and sent it out. But Christine has been a mortgage broker, as she said, for about 25 years. How'd you get into it?
I believe in divinity. My best friend, I was working at the gym, and my best friend's brother was in IT working at Merrill Lynch, and they were hiring.
Okay.
And he said, you should give me your resume.
Okay.
And I went and interviewed with Merrill Lynch. They hired me. They stick you in a classroom for 6 weeks from 9 to 5. They teach you everything you ever wanted to know about a pay stub, a W-2, a 1040, 1120. They sit you in a classroom. They teach you how to read documents. And then they give you files and say, go. It was wonderful. They taught me everything. They gave me all the basics that I needed to know. But it was divinity. It was great.
Well, it's excellent. It has been long been one of my pet peeves that it's difficult to break into a business like ours. Probably not that easy in a business like yours. But it's getting better. Adam keeps telling me that there are a lot more opportunities nowadays. So I've said many times on the show, if you are starting out, or if you're a parent of a kid starting out, there are three absolute requirements for doing what we do as certified financial planners. You have to like money. That pretty much.
Good start. Yeah. Everybody does.
Now let's talk about the part that you can whittle down. You have to like math, or at least
Maybe 50-50.
I like math. It's the same in everywhere you go. You don't have to learn a new language for it.
Yeah, they're working on that part.
Oh, please.
They're trying
no.
to mess it up. But you also have to really like people, because what we do is we deal with people face-to-face, just like Christine does. And if you're that kind of person who likes to establish relationships, I can't think of a better, cleaner, nicer, more helpful way to make a living. I've enjoyed every minute of my, so far, 21 years, I guess. And I suspect strongly that Megan will be right into it, too. Meanwhile, I want to give out the trivia question, and then I want to introduce the article that I read, and let's see what's happening nowadays, because there's strange things out there going on. The trivia question, sponsored as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, and you can call Ken at 904-636-7888. This is in honor of Christine being here. It's a mortgage-related question. I don't know if anybody knows. The mortgage rate shot up by the end of the week. Do you know the 30-year rate offhand?
Yeah, of course I do.
4.47 I've read, and 4.48. That is a rounding error. I don't dwell on those. So here
that's
we are.
That's with good credit and a down payment.
Yeah.
Goes up from
it
there.
Could be up, yeah. Now, this is one that I don't know that you'll know this even. I sure didn't. Over the past 10 years, what percentage of days in those 10 years were mortgage rates lower than they are today? And that is a good question.
That's a good question.
All right. It is said by, who was the idiot who wrote this thing? I don't know. That millennials nowadays, and oh, by the way, I forgot to explain. I am a basic old baby boomer one, as they call them now. Christine is a Gen Xer, and Megan is a self-admitted millennial.
Self-admitted, self-reluctant, whatever you want to call it.
But, you know, they're losing a lot of their bad image now because they're getting smarter. They're growing up. They're getting married, having kids, buying houses, all that stuff that are sort of natural, that we thought they were natural. But anyway, this article that I read and then sent to both of them prior to the show, it says that a lot of millennials are skipping what we would call the starter house routine. Now, I don't know anybody who hasn't started out. I don't know if starter house is the right way. My first house was a 5-bedroom Victorian mansion, basically, but it needed everything. Absolutely everything. So it was a fixer-upper, I guess, rather than a starter home. But apparently people are not looking forward to moving that often. They want to, and a lot of them have sort of a secondary thing, too. There's so much work being done from home, and a starter home is usually ill-equipped to have a home office, and that is a big deal. So now they've been able to do it, and they've been doing it successfully for quite a long time. Because what was on their side, even 2 years ago, were two things. Prices were lower, and interest rates were just wonderful. Well, now, what was it, about 19%, I think, the average price increase for homes over the last 12 months? That hurts. That's 19% more payment for you. But on top of that, interest rates are crazy now and getting crazier. And if you listen to Howard before we got on, there's a lot of people getting priced out of the market every day, and it's got to be absolutely true. So I guess my question to both these folks is, if you were in the market now as a young home buyer, would you get over it, or would you try to get a second job and buy more home, or what would be the approach? How important is it that to you to get into something that's going to last a while? And I honestly don't know what to expect to hear. But when we come back, we got a break coming up very shortly. When we come back, we will hear from both sides, the provider and the actual participant. You're not looking yet, are you?
No.
Okay.
You got to pay me more.
They ask, too. They ask for what they want.
They do.
They're not scared. They want what they want. They want it now, and they ask for it.
I have doubled Lauren's pay already.
Yes, I know. My father and I listening to the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we had an argument that you were talking about her or me, and I said it was her.
I'll sit right here and tell you I'll double your pay.
You don't pay me.
Yeah, zero to zero.
Oh, there's that.
You are no longer my direct employer.
I don't pay Lauren. I don't pay Megan. So my generous streak has boundaries on it.
Mm. Yeah. I'll take a steak dinner.
We have. Yeah. Well, I don't even do that for myself anymore. This fixed income living. Anyway, we're going to get into it all when we come back. So we'll pay a few bills and be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee.
I'm Christine Kennedy.
And I'm Megan Todd.
And as you heard, if you were listening a while back, this is our sort of three-generational impact show because we've got a baby boomer, me, and a Gen Xer, Christine, and a millennial, Megan. And I was kind of interested in how people look at things in different ages. And then after I'd set that up, I found this article about what the baby boomers are trying to do. And then it occurred to me this week that, my gosh, it's not going to work. So I was curious how Megan would look at it. Now, she's not looking right now for a home. But what do you think your friends or what do you know your friends are doing? And what do they think about all this?
Well, so that article that you sent about my generation skipping their starter home, I completely agree, especially with being able to work from home, like you mentioned. You can work anywhere. If you work from, you can work at, have your job be stationed in like Utah, and you can still live in Florida working here. So what's the point of moving to where your job is? But in addition to that, I think my generation, and it's kind of a little roundabout explanation, but we kind of grew up with more coddling from our parents. And I think that has a lot to do with the increased amount of information about child development. So parents were a little bit more involved in trying to make sure everything's okay and following the science and everything like that. And because of that, I don't think parents are as much of kicking the babies out of the nest anymore. So
some are.
Well, mine aren't. And because living at home has become less of a stigma, millennials can save money faster just by living at home, as opposed to moving out and renting or going with a fixer-upper. And with less incentive to move out, I'm not surprised that we're seeing my generation wait a bit longer and go directly to their dream home. And the definition, in my opinion, of a dream home is where you see your family and you just completely settling down and you don't want to have to move out of it.
Okay. I'd add one thing to it. It's a place where you can have a dog.
That's true. It has to be a dog.
In here today, I'm getting all kinds of allergy or something. Anyway, all right, trends in the market. Christine, what do you see from the younger people that are calling you nowadays?
I see what Megan is saying. A lot of people are living at home. You know, they're 25, 26, 27, still living at home. Some have saved their money. I have the opposite. Some have saved zero. And they, so I pulled back who I talked to this week, and I talked to three that I'm recalling, three different millennials that were wanting to buy their home. One of them had the 3% down that he needed, but he needed help with closing cost. One of them is currently not working. And by not working, I mean he works at Instacart, which is really not working. Mm. He's going to need a gift and everything from mama and even need mom to go on the loan to co-sign. Mm. And then the other one works actually at Sherwin-Williams, actually makes a really great living, has saved some of his money, but his mom is still giving him the 20% down because she's looking at wealth distribution and, you know, displacing her wealth. So that's what I'm seeing a lot of. The three people that I talked to this week, two of them had their parents help with the money, with the 20% down and the closing cost. So it's interesting, whereas 10 years ago, we didn't have that. Everybody just did the old-fashioned FHA loan with 3.5% down. That's what I did. That was my first loan. That's what everybody, I think, did. Whereas now they're saving up more money or being gifted. That's what I'm seeing a lot of.
Well, yeah, us let's talk about the baby boomers. We would be a little more reluctant than others, I think. It's very uncomfortable. Sarah and I have been talking about this thing, for decades, actually. But it was sometimes done. We did get a co-signer on a small down payment loan from her dad and paid it off virtually immediately. But it's harder when the numbers get bigger for people like us. You treat yourself first in all of that. And rules of the game here, just a moment. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning.
How you doing?
And I just got a contract to buy a house, yesterday afternoon.
Yeah.
And wow, what a stressful experience. It's like a feeding frenzy of piranha out there. And I know I've talked to you about that before,
yeah.
Steve. Now the next step is, we're approved for FHA, so maybe Christine can answer this. But my sister is a realtor. She said switch to conventional if you can get the 5%, which we will have by the time we move in August. So should I go from the FHA, which we're approved now, to switch to the conventional, because we will have the 5% by the time we move in, Christine?
So have you owned a home before?
No. Uh-uh. First time.
There's even a 3% down first-time homebuyer conventional program. So two trains. One's an FHA train. It's 3.5% down. It allows you to purchase more home. So somebody with a lower credit score or somebody who wants to spend a little bit more house, then I'll take them FHA. But I only do that. That's my absolute last resort. And the reason why is it has mortgage insurance, and the mortgage insurance is for the rest of the life of the loan.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you have the loan 27 years, you're still paying mortgage insurance. For example, my son just bought a house and we did conventional 3% down. And the reason why is that mortgage insurance, it will go away when he has 20% into the property. So the rate is a little bit higher, but the mortgage insurance is short term. So we're budgeting that he'll have maybe mortgage insurance for 3 or 4 years, because right now with property appreciating so much, the property appreciation along with the principal that he pays down, that mortgage insurance.
If you could buy a year ago, you'd already be there.
Mm-hmm. So if you can get approved for conventional, if you have the credit score, so the credit score is a 620. So FHA allows you go down to 580 and conventional is 620. So if you have
75.
Oh, then you should definitely call your loan officer. You can call my cell phone later today and I can help you. But if you want to call your original loan officer, just ask them if you can flip it to conventional, because that's going to be, you can do 3% down or you can do 5% down, but that mortgage insurance will go away. In today's market, you might have, with the, property appreciation going up so fast, it might be a 3-year number, whereas FHA is for the rest of your loan.
How about rate locks? Do you have a rate lock now?
You can lock in for either one for as long as you need. But you're closing in August, so it's quite a bit away.
Yeah, it is a long ways.
We just finalized the contract yesterday afternoon, and I haven't had a chance to talk to the mortgage lender at DHI, because we're buying a D.R. Horton new construction. They're paying the closing costs and when we use their financing. And I haven't had a chance to lock in a rate, but I'm thinking, do I need to switch to a conventional to lock the rate in, or do I lock the rate in under the FHA, which we're currently approved for? How do I do it? What do I do first on Monday?
I would call DHI, and they're a great lender, by the way. They're wonderful. I would call DHI mm-hmm. on Monday, and I would just say that, if you would like to see if you could qualify for conventional, because it's a better product for you, and you would like to do a comparison of the FHA and the conventional to see which one is better for you. It won't take very long. It's just literally a click of a button for your loan officer, so it'll be very easy. And then they can explain to you why they were originally going FHA, but it's easy for them to switch over to conventional. And then after you have the conversation about qualification, then separately, I would definitely talk to them about locking in. But I don't know what they would charge you to do that, being that it's so far away. It might not be prohibitive, cost prohibitive to do it. But definitely ask for conventional. Make that your first phone call.
Yep. You're cutting out.
Are you there?
Thank you.
Okay. Did you want to take a quick shot at the trivia?
20%.
Way too low. Thank you. However. Okay. All right. Thanks. And let us know how it comes out for you.
All right.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Christine.
That's the difference between working with a professional and we having trouble. All right. We are going to have to take a quick break and do a little sound check, perhaps. But we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Christine Kennedy.
And I'm Megan Todd.
And we have been talking about all kinds of fun things like mortgages. The lines are still open, 904-222-8255. And our trivia question is still there. We have a small bracket now. Well, it's a large bracket, actually, but what the heck. Over the past 10 years, what percentage of days has the mortgage rate been less than it is today? 20%, I said way too low. So anybody wants to take a shot at it, I think we'll surprise you by the end of the show on this thing. All right, we have kind of beaten up a little bit on mortgages. One of my other favorite topics when I have young people around, are you guys familiar with the term FIRE? F-I-R-E, it's an acronym.
I'm familiar with the kind that makes you evacuate a building.
Yeah, stop, drop, and roll. That's what I got.
That gives away your age a little bit, too. Okay. But that, now, FIRE stands for Financial Independence, Retire Early. And for the past few years, it's been touted by a lot of people, a lot of gurus. I've read article after article. And mostly what people were writing about was 55, something like that, which, you know, it's at least feasible. The newest one that's out is age 30. Now, if anybody can think of a more ludicrous topic than retiring at age 30, then please let me know. You can shoot it to info@vanweefinancial.com, and when I'm done laughing, I'll call you back.
I mean, retiring at age 25.
The only one that can possibly hit that would be in this room is Megan. So.
That's true.
Good luck.
That's true. Got 3 years in retirement.
Well, by the way, if you want to see some smart financial planning, what Megan did for her college expenses was just, I guess, hard work, right? Just kept getting scholarships and so on?
Yeah, I think it was like 60 or 70% of my undergrad was covered through scholarships. And then except for like two semesters in graduate, everything was 100% covered.
The value of hard work.
Good for you.
And then her other big plus was she hired some of the most brilliant money managers that money can buy.
Well, I mean, I didn't know I hired you until I turned 18, to be fair.
Well, there's that.
But I made a choice to stay. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it was probably the last thing on your mind that you might wind up in a profession like that also. But here you are. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, what's up, guys? Actually, you know, I had a comment on why a lot of people, I think, aren't getting their starter homes. I don't think a lot of these people in my generation have the skills to maintain a home and to even go into a fixer-upper and even know where to start.
That's an interesting concept.
Yeah, everybody seems to, you know, have to be able to call somebody to fix something, and nobody was taught these transferable skills from, you know, father to son or mother to daughter on how to maintain these things.
Yeah, and then when you call them, they don't show up.
Yeah,
that's a very interesting outlook. I have to agree with you. Back in the old days when guys took shop, as I always say, guys took shop and women took typing. Women won on that deal, by the way. Big time. I had to learn to type. But you're right. The practical skills, plumbing and carpentry and basic things like that, they're just not done anymore.
In schools anymore.
No.
Yeah, that's a really good point because the two or three millennials that I know would not be able to replace a toilet. They would have to call a plumber to replace a toilet. Or even probably the little gadget on the inside.
I have.
Yeah.
I've got the greatest tool in all of tool time. I call it my checkbook. solves anything if there's anything in it.
Yeah, but then you also got to think about our generation is being asked to help the previous generation a lot. So we're also having to, on the fly, learn marketable skills like, I don't know, electrical engineering without having to, you know, shock yourself while trying to put an entertainment system back together.
Spoken from recent experience,
yeah,
wouldn't you say?
Night.
Yeah, that's very good. It is a very good outlook. And we changed the nature of education so much after I got out of there, and it was even changing somewhat till then. I think the only thing as dismal as the teaching of some kind of household skills would be personal finance. But kids can't balance checkbooks, don't know what this is, what that is. They just don't understand money. And, of course, part of it was the reluctance of our parents and us to discuss money with strangers, even if they are strangers that live with you. And it was taboo. The things you had to whisper would be money and cancer and welfare and all that stuff. Just polite people did not talk about these things.
Or wills.
Yeah, and all of that has now changed. So I think there's a lot of hope for the future with young people to know more about a lot of practical things. But where they're going to learn carpentry skills, I don't know. Go to
YouTube.
Trade school?
YouTube University, absolutely. Sure. Google University.
Yeah, Adam's an absolute nut on YouTube. He sees something he's doing, he goes to YouTube and watches the thing and then does it. I'm not that patient, unfortunately.
But hey, Chris, you want to try the trivia question?
Yeah, I'm going to go for 40.
That is way too low.
Too low.
Wow.
It's amazing, isn't it? We'll have a little more perspective on that by the end of the show. Anyway, thank you. I loved your comments.
Thanks for calling. Certainly, great input.
It certainly does play into what's happening.
Have a great day.
Have a good one.
Well, that was interesting. I honestly had never looked at that, but fixer-uppers nowadays, you've only got two choices. You do it yourself, literally, or you call people that don't show up. But we're fortunate. We've lived down here long enough. We've got an infrastructure of people, because I've already admitted I'm almost 72 and I'm lazy anyway, but we've got an infrastructure of people who do show up and do a good job, and they do it for a reasonable amount of money.
Well,
if you don't have that, look out.
And if you think about it, like my generation growing up with you guys as parents, monkey see, monkey do, I'm going to assume that the way to do something is to open my checkbook and hire somebody to do it for me, as opposed to, oh, my dad used to, you know, he would fix the electrical or he would fix the toilet or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. And that ties right in with what we were just saying. You better learn how and why to start saving and start investing. We see a few young people in the office, not enough, I would say, but a few. And some of them are actually doing a pretty good job. If Megan's setting a good example for the younger people, but there are some of them, they're very successful. If you're making a lot of money and you're young nowadays, there's no reason why you can't get a head start on a big nest egg by the time you're in need of getting out.
I want to take just this opportunity to say thank you. We talked about this personally this week, but you and Adam, you did at the end of last year, you did your most important things that you still have to do. And you talked about it 2 weeks in a row of one, you said you absolutely had to contribute to your IRA.
Yep.
So I did that. Thank you. I put my $6,000 in that I learned from you, and I would not have done it. I've never done it before knowing you. So thank you for the advice that you always give. And thanks for the list.
For listening.
But you said this is what you still have to do before the end of the year. And I had completed most of them but that. So thank you. And then a couple of shows later, you had advised, you know, to set up my, I called you about my daughter. So she's 19. And if I could set her up for the IRA. And you said to put her on payroll.
Yeah, and make sure she actually does something.
And I have her on payroll, and she's officially on my payroll now because I own my own business, and I'm officially paying her money, and I took your advice to spread it out so she actually has a job duty to do
good.
And things she's accountable for. So at the end of this year, I'll be able to also contribute to her IRA. She'll be able to contribute
and we're adamant
to IRA. So yeah. Thank you for your knowledge.
Well, you're most welcome.
Constant.
As I say, thanks for listening. But the thing that some people come in and want to do, they want to give their child a Roth IRA. And it's hard to tell some people that they have to earn the money. You can give them money, but that's a gift. And gifts are not allowable as contributions to IRAs. They have to earn it. So you can put them on the payroll. But if it's a three-year-old and going on the payroll, I don't think IRS is going to really believe that there's value earned by that three-year-old. So you got to know what you're doing with all of this stuff.
Or we just have to call you and Adam because you know
exactly
what you're doing. And we just do what we do all day and then leave the money to you. So that's the better answer.
That's the best advice you've heard today.
I would wholeheartedly
let
agree.
Let people do what they do. And seriously, thank you for everything that you give us listeners every single week.
Because you are welcome.
You make a difference in our financial lives.
All right. Over the past 10 years, 94% of all days saw mortgage rates less than what we have today. When Sarah and I were talking about it this morning, we realized that our perspective was warped from the old days where we begged to get a 5 or 6% mortgage. We're paying 14, 15, whatever. But nowadays, since the financial crisis, rates have been so low that people are really what I would call scared or spoiled. I mean, all right, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks to